I know you had it last week off. Congratulations on surviving spring break. Most of you came back, so that's good. How many of y'all were so relieved to send your kids back to school? My mom was too, and I'm not even in her house. It's weird. So, as you know, we've been in Genesis for a whole year, and there's four events, four people. You guys remember creation, fall, flood, tower, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, and we're in the Joseph stories now. And if you remember, there was one major theme that we talked about in Genesis, and that was God's faithfulness despite failure. And so when we talked about the big events, we talked about all of God's character, that he was good and he was covenantal. And then we saw that humanity screwed it up in Genesis 3 and we're broken, and we learned all about that. And then we said, well, God has a high premium on holiness. And so the floods came, and then God really wants you to listen to his will. And so the Tower of Babel is a reminder of our in all of that. And then the brothers come along, right? Abike and Jake. And we like them. And we like them because they're screw ups. And so we would talk about them. And we'd go, hey, they really screwed up here. And God was faithful despite it. And through that, we learned that because God gave a covenant to Abraham and God was faithful to Abraham, even in the midst of his sin, that would apply to us, that God will also be faithful to us despite our sin. And what an encouraging message. And so now we get to Joseph's story and we're like, is it still God's faithfulness despite failure? Because I haven't seen a ton of failure on Joseph's part, and maybe you guys haven't either. And so suddenly we're going, is that the same theme? And I think the reason why Joseph is put in here is he's a foil to the other three. The other three were going, here's God's faithfulness despite their failure. They keep screwing up, they keep messing up, and God's being faithful. And then all of a sudden, we've got Joseph rising to the occasion and being faithful time and time again. And the camera lens is shifting just so subtly. And so over here, we've got God being faithful no matter what. And then now we've got, but what is our responsibility as humans? That yes, God will be faithful despite what you do, and you can bank on that. But if you take that too far, then suddenly goes, then it doesn't matter what I do. And I can sin all the more. Even Paul in Romans has to address that. Does that mean we sin all the more? And he goes, by no means, we don't do that. Instead, because of his faithfulness, it spurs us on to greater faithfulness in our life. And that's what Joseph does for us. He's the foil to the other three. And so we're gonna look at Joseph's life. We're gonna look at how he's been faithful time and time and time again. When you teach through Genesis, they tell you the first mistake you make is anytime you tell somebody to be like a character. Because you might go, look at Abraham, he gave up everything to follow God. And then you turn the page and you're like, oh, you gave your wife to Pharaoh, right? And so I'm like, don't be like Abraham or Jacob. You're like, wrestle with God and cling to him. And then y'all know you turn the page and he's an awful father. And you're like, oh. But with Joseph, you're like, yeah, be like Joseph. And so the reason why you can do that is because Joseph reflects Christ. So I'm not going to tell you to be like Joseph. I'm going to tell you to be like Christ. But if you want to teach your kids, what does it look like for a man, for a human, for someone who's flesh and bones to be faithful? Then you look at Joseph's life. And so that's what we're going to do. So chapters 41 and 42 are two glimpses of two different types of people. We've got chapter 41, Joseph's the poster child for Christianity. The poster child. And some of y'all know them. Like Judy Wimberly, she's my go-to on Thursday night. And so Lucina's going to be my poster child here today. And then we have in chapter 42, we've got the prodigals. And I only named them prodigals because you got to use P for both, right? That's what they teach you in preaching class. So poster child, prodigals. And you've got the brothers in 42. And what we're going to learn is that God demands the same for both of them. That even though they're coming at situations differently and they're in very different places and their circumstances are very different, their guilt is very different, their life stories are very different, and yet God demands the same thing for both of them. And what we're going to see is that God demands humble faithfulness, whether you're the poster child or you're the prodigal. And so it ventures to go that far to say that that's what God demands of us as well, humble faithfulness. And so we're going to walk through that together. And so let's look at Joseph first, chapter 41. Since you guys took a break, I'll fill you in on what's happened in his life so far. Remember in chapter 37, God comes to him and he says, you are going to be a great ruler and your brothers are going to bow down to you. Shortly after that, he's beaten and left for dead. They pull him out of the cistern and they sell him into slavery into Egypt. And he's going, oh man, maybe I got the dream wrong. And then all of a sudden he's in Potiphar's house and he rises to power in Potiphar's house. And then Mrs. Potiphar casts her eyes upon him and then falsely accuses him. And suddenly he's thrown back into jail. And now he's 11 years removed from that dream in Genesis 37. And he's going, maybe I got it wrong. Maybe I got it wrong. And then he interprets the dreams of the cupbearer and the bread baker. And then he goes, please remember me. And then they don't remember him. So 2 years go by from the last time we've talked about Joseph. And that's where chapter 41 opens up, that Joseph now is finally getting his chance. After all these years of God having prophesied to him and given him that dream, now the chance is finally coming to Joseph. And as the reader, we have to go, how's he going to respond? How's he going to respond? And so God creates the opportunity by giving Pharaoh a dream, a Pharaoh that's a symbolic dream. Pharaoh can't interpret it. He needs help. And he goes to all his diviners, all his spiritists in the land, and they can't help him either. The most powerful men in the world at this time cannot interpret this dream. And we're going, well, duh, because they're not believers, right? But these Egyptians, they had power. If you remember when Moses later on comes to them and he throws his staff on the ground, and it turns into a snake. They're like, oh, we can do that too. What? Right? And he turns the Nile into blood and they're like, blood. And as a reader, like, we can talk all about how they were able to do that, what power they were drawing from, but let's just suffice to say, they had power too. So it wasn't unusual for them to interpret dreams. It wasn't unusual for them to pull from their power and do these things. But yet this dream comes and they're stumped. The most powerful nation in the world can do nothing unless God allows them to. And God's stumping them for a reason, because he's like, hey, go get my boy. And so suddenly the cupbearer goes, oh, I got a guy. I got a guy that does dreams. You guys can't figure it out. I got a guy. Let me call my guy. So he calls him. He's like, hey, can you bring over the little Hebrew boy? So they bring him over, and Joseph stands before Pharaoh, and he's finally out of prison. He's standing before Pharaoh, and Pharaoh goes, hey, do you interpret dreams? And as a reader, we're going, what's he going to do? What's he going to do? And he says, God interprets dreams. Joseph doesn't say, yeah, I interpret dreams. What's your dream? Joseph doesn't say, yeah, if you put me into a position of power, I'll interpret your dream for you. Or, hey, I'm kind of rotting in jail, so can we make an exchange here, my life for your dream? He doesn't do any of that. Or better yet, he doesn't go, hey, Pharaoh, you're an all-powerful guy, and I'd love to be in your court. So yes, what can I do for you? Instead, he looks at him and he goes, the God of the Hebrews, the one true God, he interprets dreams. That's really powerful stuff. Because in the Egyptian culture, Pharaoh was a god. He was a god. He's walking right up to a god and saying, no, 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 you can't interpret this. God can interpret this. And through me, he will interpret your dream. That's really powerful. One commentator, when he talks about it, he says this. He says, when we explain God's revelation to the world, we must confront the world with God. When we explain God's revelation to the world, we must confront the world with God. And so a modern day example, which is a pretty weak one because this isn't a dream, but if somebody comes to me and goes, Nike, can you interpret Genesis 41 and 42? Yeah, no, I got this. I can do this. No problem. And I tell them what it means, and here's Joseph rising to power, and here's the brothers and all of that. And at the end of it, I go, okay, you understand it? Great, and walk away. That's not what Joseph does. Instead, I need to go, hey, and by the way, there's a God in this story doing all this, and you need to know that God. And that God who gives dreams to Joseph, and that God who brings the brothers in, is the same God who's wooing your heart. See, anytime we explain revelation to people, we need to be first and foremost explaining that it is God's revelation. And if there is a God more powerful than Pharaoh, then Pharaoh needs to reckon with that God. And that's what Joseph does. He comes right up to him and goes, God can interpret your dream. And so Joseph does that. He interprets the dreams. All these years he's been in prison, he doesn't grovel, he doesn't do anything. He just is faithful in the moment and uses the gift that God has given him and then gives God all the glory. That is humility. Oh, that's humility, right? Joseph, from that, ends up with this meteoric rise to fame. He's the number two guy in all of the world. Pharaoh gives him his ring, gives him his signet, he gives him all the transportation he can need, he gives him everything in his power and all of that, and Joseph remains faithful to God in the midst of that. I once heard a guy, Don Ford, he was speaking at Kanakuk, and he said, most people can handle failure better than they can handle success. And I think that is so true. It is so true for me. Right? Because in the midst of his meteoric rise to fame, Joseph is still faithful to the Hebrew God that allowed him to get beaten and left for dead, that allowed him to get sold into slavery, that allowed him to be falsely accused and rotten in prison. And the first chance Joseph gets to exalt himself, he goes, God, God does this. Whew. I had a small moment of meteoric rise to fame when I was younger. I wasn't exactly taken into Pharaoh's court, but so in Oklahoma, we're a little bit behind in some things. And so the junior high was 7th, 8th, and 9th grade. And then the high school was 10th, 11th, 12th. And so I was in the 9th grade, so I was on the junior high volleyball team. And every year, once the junior high season ended, because it was much shorter, then the high school team would come over and put on a clinic. And any young talent that they saw that they thought was pretty good, they'd pull up to the varsity team. And if you got pulled up as a freshman, you had to play on the varsity. You got to skip over JV and go straight to the big show. And so they'd come down and do it. It was sort of their farm league program to develop young talent, and they come down, and I mean, I had game, guys. I was pretty good. And so they come down, all 5'4" of me at the time, whatever. I'm not pushing much higher than that today. But I had tenacity, and so they come down, and sure enough, we had all these talented players. Some of them were my best friends, and they took one player, me. So I was like, well, of course you did. And so they did, and I got to, they would take a whole bus of all the varsity players, swing by from the high school, come to the junior high, pick me up, I'd hop on the bus, and I'd go play. And I was actually terrified. In fact, the first game I ever played with them, there was a mistake in the lineup. They wrote down, like, all the starting lineup numbers, and then the ref comes out, and he's like, no, number 9 is starting. I'm like, who's number 9? Oh, no, I'm on, okay. And so then I was like, okay, don't show them your cards. Like, pretend like you got this. I'm like, all right, let's do this. All right. So I'm like, and they're like, you just have to play one play. I'm like, yeah, set me, you know. And I called for the set, and they're like, what? Don't set her. What are you doing? Get back over here. But what was really funny is the junior high was Kerr Junior High, and we were green Eagles. We had green uniforms, green everything. I had like green Nike kicks. I thought it was so cool. And then the high school was the Dell City Eagles, and they were red. And so when I made it to the high school team, they of course gave me all my jerseys and they gave me t-shirts. And on game day, the high schoolers would wear their red shirts. And so when at the junior high, I'm strutting through my ninth grade, and I'm wearing my red shirt. Right, because I'm on the varsity now. I don't play a minute with these people. I mean, I wasn't, you know, I was good, but I wasn't that good. But I lost my identity, right? I was no longer the junior high player. I was a high school varsity player at that moment. My meteoric rise to fame, and suddenly those weren't my teammates anymore that I had spent sweat and blood and tears battling in that season. No. I'm with these girls who probably couldn't even pronounce my name. They probably still call me Nika to this day, right? Why? Because I thought I was hot stuff. I couldn't handle the success. I couldn't handle it, and I lost my identity in that. Joseph doesn't do that. We know that because when Joseph is given a wife and he's given children, he names them Hebrew names. Manasseh means that God has allowed me to forget, and not this weird, I want to suppress and forget all of this stuff, but this idea that he's allowed me to forget the pain because he's blessed me with this child and he's blessed me with this prosperity. Joseph, not for a second, forgets his true identity. And he exercises faith. He's in the land of Egypt. He could have sucked up to Pharaoh and been like, I'm going to name my kid Pharaoh Jr. or whatever the Pharaoh's name was, right? We're going to name him some cool, hip Egyptian name, right? He's like, this is Tutankhamun, my new son. But he doesn't do that. He's like, no. I belong to God. I belong to God. And this has present-day applications for us in huge ways. If y'all came to church on Sunday, I know you were blessed during worship. And I asked Callie permission to share this because I was sitting there in the audience at the 11:15 and John Abel's strumming, and I can hear the song Waiting Here for You starting to play up. And I'm like, oh my gosh, they're going to sing that song. And all my residents know, like I actually got a text during the service from my residents, like, is your heart exploding? I'm like, yes. And I look over at this friend, I go, I really hope Callie sings lead on this. And John's strumming. And next thing, Callie walks up to the mic and I grab my friend and she's like, I'm trying to worship. Like, could you? And so I like pull out my phone and I wait for, and I take a photo and I'm ready to put it on. And this is the tag, like I'm ready to say, if the disciples had known, they wouldn't have been fighting over sitting at Jesus's right and left hand. They would have fought to sit by Callie during worship in heaven. Like if they would have known, which they didn't, you know, they would. And so I'm like, and then something happened with my phone, probably because it's a Samsung, and I put it back in my pocket and the picture just disappeared. And so I come to Callie after the service. I go, hey, I just want you to know that blessed me. You using your gift in that way, that blessed me. Thank you so much for being faithful in that. And I told her about the picture, and Callie goes, well, that was probably God just protecting me from a moment of ego. And I thought, I've been there. I know what you're saying right now. But here's the thing. I wasn't wrong for praising Callie. Pharaoh wasn't wrong for giving Joseph power. Callie's not wrong for using your gifts. Callie, like Joseph and like myself, need to be mature enough in the Lord to not abandon our faith in those moments. Instead go, no, that's all to God. All to God. And Callie is thankfully much more mature than the ninth grade version of myself. And she doesn't walk around and be like, I'm worshiping. Of course that blessed you, you know? She actually did do that, didn't? No, I'm kidding. She would never do that. But yeah. And so my question for you guys is, what is that thing then? What is that thing that here, the moral of Joseph's story is don't abandon your faith in times of success, right? But abandon might be too strong of a word. Like, we're not Hollywood actresses. Like, you do know some people who grew up, like, really devout Christians, and they become actors and actresses, and they just kind of, like, walk of fame. And that's really meteoric rise to fame. So most of us are probably, I mean, like, Callie could make it on The Voice, but most of us probably wouldn't, right? And so what's that thing that maybe you're not going to have a meteoric rise to fame, but there's something in your life that you're really good at, and you're not going to abandon your faith, but you are going to steal a little bit of God's glory? What's that thing? Like, for me, it's really obvious. My gifts are up front on stage. This is my deal, right? And so I love that y'all encourage me, and you should encourage me. God has asked y'all to encourage me. My job, then, is to take all of that and go, God, aren't you so good for using a ragamuffin like me? And so you guys have things. What is it? Like, I've recently discovered that being a mom is very difficult. I thought it was easy. And part of, I think you guys nowadays, social media, I think makes it even harder on you. Apparently there's this world of comparison that I just came to realize that like moms are like, oh, we use all natural diapers, not disposable. And that makes me a better mom. And I'm like, you have to wash your son's, never mind. And you know, right? Or we only use all organic and we puree all of our own food and it comes from the farmer's market in Guatemala. And I'm like, what? and I jest, but I hear this. And then some moms go, man, I do feel inferior to my friend who comes over and her kids are clean. Like I put my kids in the sprinkler and they're like, wash and dry, right? And I'm like, oh my goodness. And so some moms, some of y'all just have it down. You're just good at it. That's a gift from God. That's not for your credit. Don't start a blog and tell everybody how good you are at being a mom. Start a blog and go, God is kind to me, and this is what he's shown me. Or start a blog and make it really funny like Jen Hatmaker. Get a reality television show and just, woo, you can just take off. God, that woman's funny. I don't even understand half the stuff. I'm like, wait, kids have to make outfits for school? I mean, the stuff y'all do, oh my word. But yeah, I mean, so maybe you're a really good mom, or maybe like Callie, you can sing, or maybe, you know, you're a really good teacher, you're a really good whatever, wife, what is that thing that maybe you're not going to abandon your faith? I think it's a pretty strong term to say, don't abandon your faith in times of success. What's that thing that competes for God's glory in your life? And root that out. In times of success, be true to God. So that's the first snapshot. Well, then we got Joseph's brothers. And y'all know, the last time we saw them, well, actually, the last time we saw Judah, he was sleeping with a prostitute who happened to be his daughter-in-law, so we won't go there. But the time before that, they just beaten their brother, left him for dead, and then go, oh, let's not leave him for dead, let's sell him into slavery, we can profit off of it. And now they come back. They come back. These are the prodigals, and they're going to be tested. Joseph sees them, and he disguises himself. I actually think he did what I'm still Nika. I don't know if y'all caught that. Nothing's changed but a pair of glasses. As if that actually works for Superman, but whatever. Never understood that. That's why Batman's superior. But yeah, the brothers come along and Joseph knows he has to test them. He has to test them. And that's appropriate because 13 years ago, they beat him and left him for dead. So it would be pretty foolish of Joseph to just reinstate them into God's plan. So they need to be tested. And so Joseph does that. That's a part of his wisdom in this process. It's part of his wisdom about it. And in that process, the brothers have a choice. They can go, you know what? That was 13 years ago. God, what are you doing? Why are you bringing this guilty conscience to light all of a sudden? We're not those men anymore. How dare you do that? But instead they go, man, this is because they acknowledge, they go, this is happening to us. We're being accused of being spies. We're being thrown in jail. These are things are happening because of our sin. And they don't dodge it. They don't walk away from it. They own it. They own it. And so we're not quite there yet where they've been completely reconciled. The next few chapters are going to be more of that reconciliation. All we really have in this chapter is the beginning of their guilty conscience going, yeah, we did screw up 13 years ago. We messed up. But we see Reuben on behalf of the brothers going, hey, but we're not those guys anymore. We're not those guys anymore. And so I'm going to go home to my dad, and we don't see the resolution of this, but we do see him going, hey, look, let me take Benjamin so we can get Simeon out. Yes, one time, 13 years ago, I did beat my brother and leave him for dead and abandon him in Egyptian prison. It's the same story. Simeon's sitting there in the prison going, guys, please come back for me. Please come back for me. And Joseph's going, if they don't come back for you, then they haven't changed. And they have an option. The prodigal's in that option. They can just go, God, you know what? Forget you. We've changed. You know that. Don't test us. Or they can go, you know what? We haven't changed. Simeon, you're on your own. Good luck. That's your fault for being in the prison. But instead, we see Reuben come to his father and he goes, Dad, let me take Benjamin because I'm not going to abandon Simeon and I won't abandon Benjamin. In fact, you can have my own sons. And that's not to say that Jacob would have killed his sons. It's to say, I will love your son Benjamin as if he were my own. That's how far they've come. That brotherly love, that familial love, that God that we don't really get a glimpse into. All these years, we haven't heard about these brothers. All these years, we're like, when they show up, we're probably like, oh. Like, if this were a movie, I'd be like, oh, run, Joseph, run, right? But instead, he goes, okay, what kind of men are you? What kind of men are you? And the prodigals have a moment where they go, you know what? We can either lean into this and go, this is fair and just because of the sins that we have committed, or we can forsake God and walk away. And those men, they lean into it. They're given an opportunity for their restoration and they lean into it. They don't make light of their sin. They don't say, well, that was 13 years ago. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. They don't make light of their sin and go, it wasn't that big deal. We did leave him. We abandoned our brother. This was a wrong thing. And then they go, but we're not those guys anymore. We're not those guys anymore. It's the same thing that Joseph is asked to do. Joseph, the poster child, is asked to be faithful in obedience and in humble faithfulness. That's what's asked of him. And now they're going, hey, be humble enough to acknowledge your sin. Be humble enough to acknowledge that you've changed. And be humble enough to lean into this, even though it's difficult. The moral of this one, don't abandon your faith in times of trial. It's the same concept. Whether you're in the palace or you're in the prison, the message is always going to be the same. Either you're going to walk faithfully with God or you're not. Or you're not. And we can give you snapshots. And I can resonate with both of these. Like the truth is because of my gift up on stage, I've had some really difficult conversations the past few weeks. And I had a friend who goes, Nike, because of your confidence and the way you handle yourself, it's as if you never screw up. And so I want to make it very clear. I'm not the poster child for Christianity. I am the prodigal. I have a past. I've made mistakes. I've screwed up royally, royally. But the message to Joseph, who's the poster child, is the same message to his brothers, and it's the same message to me that God will restore you, and when he does, humbly be obedient. That's the message. And so if you are the poster child, like if you're one of those people that has that story where you just don't have a ton of sin, God bless you for it. God bless you, and don't become arrogant, and don't look at that camp over there and go, well, of course God loves me. Of course I'm Joseph's right-hand man. No. Just be so thankful that God spared you from heartache and be so thankful that he's given you a measure of faith that you can walk in obedience. And so standing in this camp, you go, God, what do you want from me? I'll do it. That's the same camp that's over there, right? And I think the truth is we both kind of fall on both. Like there are times that by the grace of God now, I want to be the poster child for Christian. That's weird. But you know what I mean? Like I want to be Joseph. I want to be someone who flees when Potiphar's wife casts her eyes upon me. I want to be someone who goes, yeah, I'm faithful no matter what. I want to be that. But I have moments where I'm in both camps. And I think if I'm being honest, you guys probably feel the same way. And the message is the same. Be humble enough to be faithful to your God. Whether you're sitting in the palace eating from the king's table or you're starving in the land of Cana and you've got to humbly come to a foreigner and go, we need food. We need food. Message is the same because God's the same. And what he wants of you is your obedience because it will go well with you. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, I thank you that Joseph's story is in there. That if we were left with just Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, I think our theology could take a turn that says, hey, it doesn't matter what I do because you're there. And I love you that that is true. But I also love you that it goes well with me when I'm obedient to you. That it goes well with me when I'm faithful to you. And I love that you're the kind of God that gave the brothers a chance to be restored. Because I needed restoration, God. We all need restoration. So I just thank you that you're a God that will use both Joseph, who's walked faithfully step by step with you, and you're the God that will use the prodigal too. So Lord, help us. And whatever path along the journey that we're in, wherever we're at in that, I pray that today we would be women who humbly accept your call in our life and walk in faithfulness wherever we're at. And we just love you, and we thank you for your son and your spirit, that through your spirit makes it just a little bit easier for us. It's your son's name we ask these things. Amen.